I'm here at the Monash Medical Centre today and I'm talking to Dr. David Scott, who's a research fellow at Monash Uni's Bone and Muscle Health Research Group. David, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Talk to me about sarcopenia. What is it and how has the definition of it changed over the years?
Yes, so it's a very new term to a lot of people, but it's actually been a term that's been floating around for about 25 years. It was initially described in 1989 by a dietitian from the US who suggested that that decline in lean mass that we see in our older adults during aging can really have some serious functional consequences. And he gave it the name sarcopenia, which he took from the Greek to mean the loss of flesh. He thought by proposing a name such as that, then people might start actually giving it a bit more attention. And he was quite right, actually. So since then, there's been a really exponential increase in the research into sarcopenia. And what we've seen probably in the time since is he was partly wrong in the sense that low muscle mass itself is not actually a really good predictor of poor function during aging, the muscle strength itself and the function of the muscle. So around about the 2010 period, groups of experts got together on sarcopenia and they've proposed that the real definition now should be both the loss of muscle mass but also a loss of muscle strength. And they proposed some certain cut points that we can use to look at whether people have low muscle mass as well as low function.
So one of the things you were discussing in the paper that you've written for an upcoming MJA is the relationship between sarcopenia and insulin resistance. Explain to us a little bit the mechanism involved there.
There's quite a few mechanisms by which we could see sarcopenia contributing to insulin resistance, and they haven't been fully explored. But, I mean, in the first case, we know that our skeletal muscle is our most insulin-sensitive tissue, our largest insulin-sensitive tissue in the body, and accounts for about 80% of glucose disposal. So if we have low muscle mass in the first case, obviously that can contribute to potentially being insulin-resistant. The other thing that we were proposing in the paper is that what we see during aging is a decline in the quality of the muscle, and there's a few things that go on. In particular, we see mitochondrial damage, which we know has been linked also with type 2 diabetes, and also increases in fat infiltrating the muscle. So if you imagine a nice piece of Wagyu beef,
yes,
the same thing happens to our muscles as we age, and that has also been linked with increased inflammation and also increased levels of insulin resistance.
So what's the prevalence of sarcopenia amongst old people in Australia? Do we know exactly?
We really don't know, and it's a really tough one to answer because we just don't really have clear definitions at the moment. There's a few different definitions of sarcopenia that are being proposed, and they've only really come into existence in the last 5 years or so we don't really have a lot of data out there that can tell us how much of this is going on in the older adult population. I guess if you think how many people are losing muscle mass and strength, it's 100%. Everybody's got sarcopenia. If you think of who's got the low muscle mass and low strength by the cut points that have been provided, the little bit of evidence we have suggests that it could be up to about 30% in the community-dwelling older adult population of the age of about 70, within, obviously, nursing homes and other sort of care facilities. It can be much, much higher.
Can we definitively say that there's an association between sarcopenia and the risk of type 2 diabetes?
I don't know if we can definitively say it yet because there has actually been no study that's taken the clinical definitions of sarcopenia that we have and looked at whether people who have sarcopenia have a higher incidence of type 2 diabetes. I think what we can say is that there's really good evidence now that the people who have the worst muscle strength and the worst muscle mass in longitudinal studies do seem to develop type 2 diabetes at a higher rate. So whether we can definitively say that's sarcopenia or it's other factors that are contributing to that, I think there's still a bit of research to be done, but we certainly think that, yeah, there's definitely certainly myself, before we sort of started looking into this area, you kind of think of type 2 diabetes as a condition of obesity, but it's actually also really a condition of aging. So, you know, about 90% of the people who have type 2 diabetes in Australia are over the age of 40, and it increases with age. So we've got a growing older adult population. We've also got a growing obese population. And it's interesting to note from the research that we're seeing as well that obesity in the older adult population isn't really a good predictor anymore of mortality. People seem to be living longer with obesity, and that's, I guess, can lead to having a long period of time with type 2 diabetes and experiencing some of the complications that come along with that.
One of the things I found interesting in the paper was metformin, obviously the number one treatment option for type 2 diabetes. It's not a big help, is it, for sarcopenia?
That's right, yeah. There's no real evidence that it can improve your muscle mass or muscle function, or in an older adult, stop them from declining. Yep. And in fact, there's some evidence from animal studies that perhaps it could actually have negative effects on muscle. So I think, yeah, the idea that by giving metformin, the most common drug for type 2 diabetes, we might see improvements in physical function. It's possible, because if people are healthier and they're able to move more and maybe get more active, they might have improvements in their muscle mass and function. But I think that the drugs themselves won't really have any independent benefit.
So how do we lessen the effects of sarcopenia? How do we treat it and manage it?
At the moment, We're in a stage where we really don't have a lot of good evidence on the best treatments. There are some drugs that are sort of in phase 2 trials at the moment for mm-hmm. sarcopenia. It's certainly getting a lot of attention from the drug companies, particularly in the US and Europe, in terms of looking for molecules that can treat the condition. But really the best evidence we have is resistance training using right. weights and exercise, as well as perhaps trying to make sure that the diet is adequate. And by that, particularly protein intake in older adults is important to probably meet the recommended allowance, if not exceed that when you're performing resistance training. Because we do know that resistance training seems to have greater benefit if the protein is adequate for the muscle rebuilding.
What's vitamin D's role in all of this?
That's another good question. We know that vitamin D is often low in people who are obese or have type 2 diabetes, and low vitamin D is also associated with sarcopenia. In clinical trials, when we do vitamin D supplementation, there's really not a good amount of evidence that we actually see improvements in either insulin sensitivity or muscle function. But certainly we think that if we have adequate vitamin D levels, and certainly we should be looking at that in obese and type 2 diabetic patients, and there's probably a little bit of evidence to say that the people who have good vitamin D levels will respond a little bit better to resistance training and exercise interventions, perhaps, in terms of their functional improvements.
So if I'm a GP and an older patient with type 2 diabetes comes in, it's a fair bet sarcopenia is going to be somewhere in the mix. Mm-hmm. What's my best management plan?
The management plan that we'd like to see happening now is, I mean, sarcopenia can be quite simple to look at and to look at whether your patient has that. A simple way would be to have them just rise from the chair they're sitting on 5 times without using their arms and say, can you do that? And if they're not able to do that, that's actually quite a good predictor of having increased risk of functional decline in the coming years. So that's a good way to, I guess, assess whether the person might have sarcopenia. And then from that stage, I think really thinking about their exercise plan, whether there's something that they can be doing that can potentially improve their muscle function. And utilising exercise physiologists is certainly a good way to move down that path. And I think particularly in the case where someone might have type 2 diabetes as well, I think it's really important to engage exercise physiology, because they're well trained in terms of knowing the potential risks and side effects of that exercise. The exercise can also be quite simple, quite easy to perform. There's simple things like ankle weights, resistance bands that can be bought for very low cost, can be done in the home, and just give that person an opportunity to increase their muscle function and become more mobile. There was just something that we touched on was the resistance to the beneficial effects of exercise. Quite a new research area, but essentially we're seeing that about 20 to 30% of people with type 2 diabetes don't seem to get any improvements in their metabolic health in response to an exercise program, which shows that exercise doesn't necessarily cure all. But I think it also shows the need for us to think about exercise as a drug in a lot of ways. So if we were to prescribe a drug, we would monitor how that is being used and how what effects it's having, and we mm-hmm. need to do the same with exercise. So it's possible that you can give a certain type of exercise to a type 2 diabetic patient or one with sarcopenia, and they come back and you see no real improvement a few months later. But it's just a matter of potentially modifying the exercise, looking at different ways for things that can be done, looking at potential barriers as to why people aren't able to do the exercise, and trying to help with that as much as possible.
Terrific. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.